Greetings, brethren. First, this afternoon, I believe I should say a few words about my own health. About 5 weeks ago, I had to come back home from Orr, Minnesota. Once again, as the year before, we were on our way to the summer camp in Scotland. And I was overtaken by the temperature and decided I had to get back home immediately. And it seemed that I caught some kind of a virus. And my temperature rose up and stayed more or less for 2 weeks or more at about an additional 2 degrees. It did not rise higher, for which I was very grateful. But then it began to improve somewhat. And now for the past 3 weeks or so, I find that my temperature will be normal in the mornings, but it rises in the afternoon. Now, that's one reason that we set this service 30 minutes earlier today, because my temperature does rise in the afternoon and by evening. If I walk about 10 steps just across the room, I'm huffing and puffing as if I'd run a quarter mile at full speed. And that is the toughest race as any one who goes out for track, and any athlete will tell you. Because the quarter mile is usually run at full speed, and it leaves you with you feeling like your heart's going to break by the time you get to the finish. And I felt that way many a time. And often it's that way at bedtime. I have a hard time even getting from a chair where I can undress into bed. Now, we've had some blood tests made. Unfortunately, during the morning service, I was listening to it on my television set, where I see it just as if I were sitting in the front row here, and better than I would in my usual seat in this auditorium. There was a knock at the door, and there was a woman coming to take some blood and withdraw some blood for another blood test. And I had to explain. I guess the doctor who had sent her at that time didn't realize. I said, we are in the midst of a very serious annual holy day service. We're in a church service, and I cannot be disturbed now. I'm very sorry. So I think she's going to come tomorrow. I hate to have them take blood, because two such tests have already been made and analyzed, and the trouble in my condition seems to be I just do not have enough blood. It's not anemia. Anemia is a lack of iron. My blood shows a sufficient iron content. The doctor thought that I should not take milk, and for the first 3 weeks or so after this thing started, I withdrew from all milk, cheese, and everything of that sort. Well, I'm the calcium type. Every one of us is of a different chemical type, physically. Most people don't know that. But I do need calcium. And the blood test showed I was short on calcium, so I've gone back to more milk again. I do try to watch my diet. And blood, it seems, is manufactured in the marrow of the bones. And bones come from calcium. Now, my doctor says that any other doctor would say that I needed an immediate blood transfusion. He doesn't want me to have that. First place, he said it would only be temporary, a stopgap. Second place, I could catch this new fatal disease of AIDS. Again, he laughed and he said, "You won't catch AIDS if you ever take it, because," he said, I'll get the blood from some of your own people. So some of you better look out. Fortunately, my doctor doesn't believe in much medicine. He's very careful about diet, however. But I do need your continued prayers. And I don't know, perhaps I have 80 or 85% enough blood. But you know what your life is? Your Bible tells you, if you listen. When you read, the blood thereof is the life thereof. And God breathed into man the breath of life, and man became a living soul. Into the dust of the ground, the breath is the life, and the blood is the life. So your life comes from two things, breath and blood. And they mix in your lungs, where the blood is oxidized by the breath. Impurities are thrown out, and the blood goes on to supply the life. Well, brethren, we are gathered here today on a very solemn Sabbath day. I doubt if we fully realize just how serious and how solemn it is. I hope I can make that a little more plain and simple to you this afternoon. We are here to be reminded of a day that is a foreshadow of the most tremendous event that has ever happened in the history, not of mankind, not of this earth, but the most important event that has ever happened in the entire universe. And I don't think you've ever realized that full scope before. I want you to realize it this afternoon. The event we're here to celebrate, in one sense, is the greatest event that has ever happened in the history of the entire universe. Except that God has always existed and has always lived. And that was not a beginning. There was no beginning, there'll never be an ending. Because God was without father, without mother, without descent, having neither beginning of days, nor shall ever have end of life. But I'm reminded of the time when I was advertising manager and editorial writer on a daily newspaper. And one day, about four or five of us were having a little sort of a talk. There were the newsmen, the editors, and the news writers. And they were discussing what would be the most astonishing and the greatest headline that you could possibly write on a newspaper. And one of them suggested, and by the way, this was before World War II, one of them suggested, another world war breaks out. The Second World War. Another one said, I think something else would be even more shocking. New York City suddenly blown entirely off the map. New York City totally leveled. Then another says, oh, that's tame. He says, I think the most important headline would be, Second Coming of Christ happened this morning. Ha, 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 ha. And they all had a big laugh, except me. I said, you men, if you live long enough, may live to write that headline. And they didn't laugh any further, because to them it was a big joke. But brethren, I want to tell you, it's no joke. But why could the Second Coming of Christ be the most important event that has ever happened in the entire universe? I don't think you've heard it put that way before. I doubt if many of you understand the real reason why it is that important. You know, I've mentioned many times how Winston Churchill said before the United States Congress during World War II, there is a purpose being worked out here below. You know, somehow he knew there was a purpose being worked out, and here below means there was a superpower above working it out. He didn't know much about that power. He didn't know what that purpose was. And very few people on earth do know. And very few people even realize there is any purpose to life or any purpose being worked out. Now, about the second coming of Christ, when they asked Jesus to teach us to pray, he gave what is generally called the Lord's Prayer, although it isn't the real Lord's Prayer. The real Lord's Prayer is found in the 17th chapter of John. But he taught us to pray a few things, about four or five things there, among which was, Thy kingdom come, Thy will be done on earth as it is in heaven. Do you know the churches don't pray that? They don't understand that God's kingdom has not come and is going to come. They think it's already here. They say they're in the kingdom. Some say the church is the kingdom. Some say that, well, the kingdom is something in the hearts of men. They have every kind of wrong idea, but none of them seems to understand it. They don't understand the prophecy of Isaiah, the 9th chapter, verses 6 and 7, where it says that a virgin is going to conceive and bear a son, and his name will be called. No, that's in the 7th chapter of Isaiah, but in the 9th chapter, that the nation Israel would have a child, would be born as a baby, and would grow up, and the government would be on his shoulder, that he would live forever, and his kingdom would last forever and ever. They don't seem to know that that's in the Bible, and they don't understand it. They have been deceived. They just think that we live. They don't know how we came to be on earth. They don't know of any purpose in life. They think if you do good, you'll go to heaven when you die. And if you do what you think is wrong, and of course you decide what's right and wrong for yourself, but if you do what you think and what you know is wrong, then you're going to go to hell, where you're going to burn and burn and burn and burn, never burn up, but just keep burning forever, shrieking and screaming in pain forever and ever and ever. And of course, if that were true, then the saved mothers who've gone to heaven will see some of their children down there shrieking because they seem to be able to see them and know what's going on. Well, this world has been terribly deceived. And they just simply don't understand. Some look at a passage in the 14th chapter of John where Jesus said he was going to heaven. And he said, if I go, that he would come again, but they forget about his coming again. But he said, in my Father's house are many mansions. Now, if you will go to the original Greek in which that was written, you'll find it means possessions, occupations, possessions of government. Not houses to live in, built out of wood or stone or brick, but positions. And some can't understand, if he went to prepare those places, why we don't go on to heaven. And then he said, I will come again and receive you unto myself. And so they think that when he comes, he's only coming to meet us as we take off to heaven. They overlook 1 Thessalonians in the 4th chapter, where it says that at that time the dead in Christ will be resurrected, and they shall rise first. And we which are alive will not prevent or precede their coming. They will rise first. And we which are alive and remain shall be instantly translated from mortal unto immortal, and shall be caught up together with them in the clouds to meet the Lord in the air. He's not coming to meet us as we go to heaven. We're going to meet him as he returns here. But where does he go? Zechariah 14 says that very same day we're going to meet him in the air in the clouds, and he's coming on down from those clouds and land on the Mount of Olives just to the east of Jerusalem. And they overlook that entirely. They only read a few of the scriptures. They leave out the ones that would entirely negate everything they have claimed and everything they believe. But why is it of such great importance? Why do I say that it will be the greatest event in the entire universe so far? To understand that, we have to go back to the very beginning, and I want to go through it and skip through it real rapidly. We need to have a background. You need to get the whole picture. We can get little details. You can get lost in the detail if you don't know what goes around and what's on the other side. I remember the old saying, a bear went over the mountain. He went over the mountain to see what he could see. And the other side of the mountain was all that he could see when he went over. Well, most people don't know anything except what they see immediately around them. We need to go back in time. We need to go out in space. We need to get the whole picture. And in that whole picture, I want to give you something that perhaps you hadn't realized before quite this afternoon. I said a while ago that God and the Word, that in the Greek language is called the Logos, who was with God and was God, but another personage altogether, and the Logos became flesh and dwelt among us and became Jesus Christ. And of him it is said in the book of Hebrews that he was without father, without mother, without descent, without beginning of days or end of life. The same is true of God the Father. Now, in him was life. In the Father was life. And if he had life, he had movement and action, and he was doing something. Well, when Jesus was on earth, he said, I work and my Father works. They did work, but how did they work? What did they do? Well, we find the Bible reveals they were creators. Now, they had a job to do, and there were two of them. They were two different personages, and yet both were God. The Word was with God, but the Word also was God. And so God is God, and the Word is God. Well, I am Armstrong, and my two sons were Armstrong. And all of my male grandsons are Armstrongs. But they're different people. And so the Word finally became the Son of God by being born of the human Virgin Mary. But he had existed from eternity with God. Now, what did they do way back there before he became Jesus Christ? And that was before there was any earth. That's before there was any universe. They were creators. And to create, they had to think out a plan and a design and design what was to be created. They had to create whatever was made. At first was spirit. I was going to say the material that anything they created was made of, but angels are not material even. They're spirit beings. Now, the first thing that the God family, and God is a family, the first thing that the God family, God and the Word, created was angels. Now, if they're working to do something, they have to have some kind of relationship in the way that they work together and do it. And two cannot walk together except they be agreed. Well, they were perfectly agreed. Jesus was the Word, but he said, I have spoken nothing except what my Father told me to speak. He said, I have kept my Father's commandments. He said, my Father is greater than I. At another time, he thought it not robbery to say that he was equal with his Father. He was equal in the family sense, just as a son may be equal to his human father. He's a human being the same as his human father is, but he's not equal in authority. And Jesus was not quite equal in authority, but he was as a being. And finally, after he had been born human, and after he had ascended up to heaven, where he said he would go and that he would come again, God had turned all power in heaven and in earth, in the entire universe, over to Jesus Christ. But he still operates it and does everything he does as his Father dictates. Two can't walk together except they be agreed. Again, let me tell you, two cannot walk together except one is the leader, the boss. People don't believe that today. God made the husband the head of the wife. You'll never find a real happy marriage unless the husband is the head of the wife. They might even get along to a certain extent. They might kid themselves they're happy, but they're not as happy. They don't know real happiness unless they're happy in the way God intended them to be. Now, the wife is equal with her husband. She's a human being the same as he is. She's an heir of salvation the same as he is. But he is the leader. Jesus is equal with God the Father. He is God. But God is in charge. They are not equal in authority. Now, the first thing that they created was angels. And each angel was created separately and individually. Angels were not reproduced or born as humans are. Each one of us humans has come from a mother impregnated by a father. And it took a father and a mother to produce each one of us. Angels have no father or mother. Except that in the sense of being their creator, they have been called sons of God, as you find in the first chapter of Job. But we also find in Job 38 that at the time of the creation of the earth, the angels were singing and the archangels shouting for joy. Because this earth was made to be their abode. Now, God created the earth. Well, how did the sun and the moon get there? How did Mars, Jupiter, Saturn, the other planets of our solar system, how did they come to exist? How did our whole system, which is part of a Milky Way, which is one galaxy, come to exist? And there are many other galaxies beside the galaxy of which our Milky Way is one, and our solar system is even part of that. God created it all. And in Ephesians 3 and verse 7, I believe it is, God created all things by and through Jesus Christ. So in a sense, Jesus Christ was the maker. But he only made by his word. He spake and it was done, and he only spoke what the Father told him to speak. There was complete harmony and unity. How did they live together? They lived in love. Love one to the other. The Son loved the Father and obeyed him. The Father loved the Son, and when he became Jesus and was born and was being baptized in the River Jordan, God the Father said, "You are my beloved Son, in whom I am well pleased." He loved the Son. Jesus loved the Father and obeyed him. There was absolute cooperation. Now, how did they live? They lived by the way of love, which is cooperation, mutual respect, working together, but one in leadership. And in the Bible we read that there is one lawgiver. Jesus Christ is not that lawgiver. God the Father is the lawgiver. But God the Father judges no man. He's turned all judgment over to Jesus Christ the Son. So there is organization. And there had to be organization. And to have organization, you have to have some sort of government. You have to have a structure by which people operate together, or you have friction and one against the other, and finally anarchy and self-destruction. Now, the way they operated together was love. And love is an outgoing concern toward the other. That becomes a law, because what is a law now? When I made a very short address before the graduate school of the constitutional law department of the Law School of the University of Southern California, I gave them a definition of law. And I said, I'm not a lawyer. I haven't studied your law books here, but I have studied a law book that I said you may not even have in your library here, but it's the foundation of all law books. It's one called the Holy Bible, and it speaks about law from the very beginning to the very end, all the way through. And lawyers ought to know what it says about law if they want to know about law. You know, later they did look it up and found one copy of that book in the whole library of the law library of the University of Southern California. So they told us that they were ordering, I think, about a dozen more of Bibles. Well, law is merely the rules of human conduct. It's a rule which, if you violate it, brings with it a penalty. Now, you might call the rules of a football game, and football is just on now, I guess, the rules are a law. And if there is a violation, if a man is offside, that's a violation. They fine that team by a 5-yard penalty. There are certain other violations. If they violate that law or that rule, it could be 10 or 15 yards. A law brings a penalty. And a law is merely rules of human performance or conduct. Now, the first thing that God created was angels. He had a law that they should love one another. And love is an outgoing thing from one toward others, of having concern for the welfare of the other. That's what it amounts to. And cooperation with the other, being a kindly feeling toward the other. Not hostility, just the opposite, but rather cooperation. That was the relationship between God and the Word. And it was cooperation. Now, I've gone over all this before, and I'm going to go over some more of this because I want to come to something. So God put angels on this earth, perhaps a third of them, because a third of them went wrong, and I would assume that probably those were the third that were on the earth. Anyway, he put a super archangel, and there are three kinds of angels, ordinary angels and seraphs, and then cherubs. The cherubs are the highest, and only three of them are mentioned in the Bible. If God has created more, he doesn't tell us. But he does mention the three and give us their names. They're Michael and Gabriel and Lucifer. And Lucifer is the one who was one of two whose wings had spread out over the very throne of God in God's heaven. And God's heaven, I guess you would think of it as being on a planet where gravity keeps drawing it down. But You see, originally there was no earth. There was no matter of any kind. Everything was spirit out in space. But there was a throne of God, and God is ruler. And the very fact that God began to create others, there had to be rules that applied to their conduct one with the other so they could work together and do what they were given to do. And that means government. And the government is based on the principle of love. Now, for humans, that is given in the Ten Commandments, the first four of which tell us how to love God, define love, or that is the general principles of love toward God, and the last six give the general principles of how we love neighbors. But that's only in principle. And sin is the transgression of the law, and sin is transgression of the obvious intent or principle of that law, not just a letter of the law, if we understand it. You'll read that in the third chapter of 2 Corinthians. But God had to have organization. Now, when he created the earth, he created the entire universe at the same time. In Genesis 1, verse 1, in the beginning, Elohim, which is translated into the English word God, and it should be gods, it's in the plural, created the heavens, and that should be plural, and is in the original language as Moses wrote it, and the earth. So the heavens, everything in the whole universe was created at the same general time. Now, in the second chapter of Genesis, you read about in the day in which God created the heavens and the earth. That means the entire universe. But their day doesn't necessarily... Day is used in two ways in the Bible. Sometimes it's a 24-hour day, consisting of a light part we call day and a dark part we call night. The 7 days in the first chapter of Genesis were 24-hour days. But here it speaks of day in the general sense of an approximate time. That doesn't... That's without regard to whether it's 24 hours or... maybe several days, or it could be maybe 24 years or more. But it's an approximate general time. God created the universe. Now, he had created a whole universe. Now we find that he put the angels on this earth. And we find a great deal of evidence in the Bible. And, of course, I've written on this. It was in the book on the human potential. You'll also find it in the book that has just been printed. Many of you haven't received your copy as yet. Some of you have. All will receive it at least at the Feast of Tabernacles, if not sooner. There'll be a copy at least for every family in the church. And we're sending a copy, by the way, to all co-workers, too. And anyway, God had a great purpose. When he created the universe, he wanted that universe perfected. Now, God creates in dual stages, not all at once. It's like a woman baking a cake. She bakes the cake first, but it's not complete until she takes it out of the oven and then later puts the icing on it. Now, what she takes out of the oven is, it's good as far as it's gone. Nothing wrong with it. It just needs to be a little something more added to it. When God created the heavens and the earth, he took one planet. And that one planet was called Earth. And that planet God had designed and intended to become his headquarters of the whole universe. Now, I don't think you've heard that spoken of before. Still, I think you'll find something of it in the Human Potential book. Now, he put angels here to try them to see if they could do what he wanted done. He had created the earth, and as far as he went, everything he had done was very good. Not ordinary good, very good. But it wasn't complete. The icing wasn't on the cake yet. And he put angels here on the earth. Now, he intended angels to work the earth. In the earth, it comes in three different forms. The solid part of the earth, which consists of rock and metals, iron, steel, all kinds of metals. It consists of dirt. And it consists then of liquid, which can be water, oil, and various liquids. And it consists of gas, which we call air, or gases. For example, one, which we call H2O, or water, at 212 degrees Fahrenheit, it begins to be converted into steam, or a gas that goes up and just goes into the air. At below 32 degrees Fahrenheit, it becomes a solid, just like rock, and we call it ice. And you know, you can melt gold, you can melt silver, you can melt bronze until they flow just like thick water. Now, there are forces in the earth. There are elements that produce electricity in the earth. There are elements that can produce great power. Oil can burn. We find elements in the earth that can explode. Now we find what they can do with an atom, and that there is energy and power within the matter of the earth. God intended the angels to try out on the earth first before they went to the other planets and the other places in our solar system, in our galaxy called the Milky Way, and in other galaxies. This was the tryout, the earth. He wanted them to work the earth and beautify it and improve the face of the surface of the earth and make it more beautiful. Instead, they defiled the earth. They ruined it. And it went into a state of decay. And decay is not a created state. God cannot, never did create anything in a state of decay. But now, while I'm on that, we find that the moon is in a state of decay. I knew all along that Mars and the other planets in our solar system are in a state of decay. And when they first landed, a camera in an unmanned spacecraft on the face of Mars, and it sent photographs back here, we could see nothing but decay. Now, decay is not an original created condition. It has become that way. Instead of improving the earth, the angels destroyed it, and they became demons. And Satan rebelled against the government of God. The government of God would have given them the way of teamwork, of working together, of cooperation, organization, to produce a result. Instead of that, there was chaos. And they rebelled against God and against God's basic principle of government, which is love. And they went into competition and strife and hatred and destruction instead of constant.